well who was going to be involved, and they canceled yes. that because you said no as a child.
Right. The plan was, now when Ted was sleeping with me, of the right in our face, he was sleeping with Mrs. Buchanan, and this is really sad. They were also involving an 18 or 19 year old college student named Robin Stryker, who's quoted in the Times.
And we just have 15 seconds.
Woman. Yes. So we were having a threesome. They wanted to have a foursome, and I got sick and canceled it. My point is that Ted Nash most probably was sleeping with many other young women. I don't know if they were as old as me, but they're out there, and I hope they come forward.
We have to
name
leave it there, but
now.
We're going to continue with part two. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Do you love music but don't have the energy to find new stuff? Can't decide whether you want to hear indie rock or hip-hop, electronic music or singer-songwriters? Then tune into Another Late Night every first Saturday at 3 a.m. only on KBOO Community Radio, or stream online at kboo.fm/anotherlatenight, where we've got it all.
During the last 6 weeks, you heard the special programming of our winter fundraising drive. Thank you for supporting Volume 2 of the All Thrills, No Frills campaign. KBOO is on course to exceed our goal of $17,000 as the final checks come through the mail. If you haven't already, get your limited edition Bluegrass Marathon t-shirt. Please go to kboo.fm/bgshirt. This design was created by a volunteer creator from Music from the True Vine, which airs every Saturday at 9 a.m. Don't wait. Get yours now. Go to kboo.fm/bgshirt. Again, thank you for supporting your community radio, KBOO FM.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, yet another move in favor of tolling on interstates in Washington and Oregon. An Oregon U.S. senator leads an effort to tackle plastics pollution. And how to make food more inclusive of the cultures in the Pacific Northwest.
These families are Hispanic, these families are Russian, these families are Arabic, these families are Somali. They come from all different walks of life.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, March 30th, 2023. I'm Annette Newell. Thanks so much for joining us tonight. Former President Donald Trump has been indicted on charges related to hush money payments he made to Stormy Daniels in the 2016 presidential campaign. He is the first ex-president to be indicted or formally charged with a crime. A grand jury in New York voted today to indict Trump for his role in hush payments made to adult film star Stormy Daniels during his first presidential run. So far, the charges that Trump has been indicted on are sealed, but observers expect that the charges involve a violation of campaign finance law. Trump had the opportunity to testify in front of the grand jury before they made their decision, but refused the opportunity. People have expected an indictment against Trump since early March, but it was a surprise the decision came out today. Trump's team allegedly found out from the New York Times report on the indictment. Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg is expected to reach out to Trump's team to discuss his surrender to face arraignment. Trump has said previously he would still run for president in 2024 if he's charged with a crime, but 40% of Republicans say he shouldn't, according to a recent Reuters Ipsos poll. It is the first time a former or sitting president has been charged with a crime. Trump also faces two criminal investigations by a special counsel appointed by U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland and one by a local prosecutor in Georgia. Oregon has proposed collecting tolls on parts of Interstates 5 and 205. Now, the Washington State Senate's proposing using tolls to pay for a significant part of the new I-5 bridge project. KBOO's Josh Salem has the story.
A bill in the Washington State Senate Transportation Committee would authorize the establishment of tolls on the I-5 bridge, ostensibly to help pay for the multi-billion dollar project. However, further conditions must be met, including obtaining sufficient federal dollars and coming to a tolling agreement with Oregon. Simply approving that authority does enhance the application for federal grants. The bill would not authorize tolls on Interstate 205, though that measure has been considered in Oregon. It does not set the rates that drivers would pay, and it doesn't have a start date. Tolls may be a big part of plans to fund the interstate bridge. Planners estimate they could pay for some $1.1 to $1.6 billion towards the project. One proposal has drivers paying between $1.50 and $3.55 to cross the bridge. There's an intention to use variable rate tolling, where the prices change based on the amount of traffic. Planners do hope to offer reduced tolls for low-income drivers. Replacing the more than 100-year-old bridge is expected to cost between $5.5 and $7 billion, and federal monies should pay a significant fraction of that figure. The Inflation Reduction Act has theoretically made a windfall, measured in billions, available. The I-5 planning staff hopes to start applying for federal grants this summer. United States Democratic Representative to Washington's 3rd District, Marie Glusenkamp-Perez, said she is simply hopeful to see the replacement begin. Perez said, quote, "The best bridge is one that gets built. My role in Congress is securing the federal dollars needed to complete the project, and I hope that any plan at the state level to fund the bridge replacement project keeps the impact on working people top of mind," end quote. Oregon has already given its Transportation Commission the authority to toll, according to the Washington bill. For KBOO News, I'm Josh Salem.
Oregon's legislature is looking at several bills that would regulate plastics and plastic waste. At the same time, the federal government is also investigating the problems that come from plastics, including impacts on health and the environment. Today, Oregon U.S. Senator Jeff Merkley talked about it during a Senate committee hearing.
Mass production of plastic began in earnest during the days of World War II. It continued to boom in the decades that followed, heralded by many as a bold new frontier in material abundance, thanks to its versatility, its durability, its inexpensive cost of production. There's a scene from the movie The Graduate where one character speaking to another says, "There's a great future in plastics. Think about it." Well, now, decades after the filming of The Graduate, we've had a chance to think about it, not only to think about it, to experience it, to live it, and to know that with this particular material comes not just a variety of potential uses, but a significant number of problems, of challenges. And it's our responsibility to understand these problems and seek a way to address them. We know that one of our problems is the massive amount of greenhouse gases emitted through the entire life cycle of plastics, from its extraction and transportation of the raw material of methane gas to the greenhouse gases produced in the process of refining and manufacturing to the management of plastic waste through incineration. Many folks just don't connect that plastics are closely tied to the petrochemical industry. Fossil fuels are part of nearly every stage of plastics production. It takes the raw feedstock and chemically refines them, turns them into polymers, which become the building blocks of plastic manufacturing. So right from the start, the very first step in creating new plastic is pulling fossil gas out of the ground. It contributes to an increase in methane being released into the atmosphere through that massive network of pipes. And over a 25-year period, methane is 80 times more efficient in trapping heat than carbon dioxide, ounce per ounce. And then there is another challenge, the unthinkable amounts of waste. It's estimated that Well, at least 3/4 of the plastic ever produced has ended up as waste. And now the ratio has grown to something close to 90% of the plastic produced ending up as waste. We always hear the mantra of the three R's: reduce, reuse, recycle. But less than 10% of our plastic is actually recycled. And that's despite the blue bin program. And most of the plastic that you'll put in that blue bin is, it's referred to as wish cycling. You put it in wishing that it's going to be recycled, but the reality is that in most cases, it is not. So instead of the reality of three R's, the true case is the three B's. Plastic is burned, it's buried, it's borne out to sea. And in the process, it creates public health and ecological challenges. Each year, thousands of seabirds, sea turtles, seals, other marine mammals die from ingesting plastic or getting tangled up in plastic. Fish in the Pacific Northwest ingest an estimated 12 to 24,000 tons of plastic annually. Plastic pollution often comes in the forms of lumps, but it also comes in the form of microplastics. And microplastics have now penetrated every system on Earth, in the water, the soil, the air, our food systems, even our human body. They've made their way into our lungs, into the breast milk we feed our babies, into our bloodstreams, and that produces a lot of public health concerns. Plastics have more than 10,000 chemicals associated with them, over 1/4 of them having potential health risks, including chemicals that mimic, block, or alter the actions of hormones, reduce fertility, and damage the nervous system. It's estimated that each of us consumes about a credit card worth of plastic every week. And I don't think there's a person in America who likes the idea of envisioning their children eating a credit card worth of plastic each week with all the chemicals that are in it. So it gives us pause. The fossil fuel industry is envisioning a massive increase in the production of plastics, but that will only amplify the problems, and it makes it even more urgent that we address them, that we work to protect human health and to protect the integrity, defend the integrity of our ecosystems. So we have to understand, increase our understanding of the challenges, and explore ways to address those challenges, to solve those challenges. And that is the purpose of these hearings. We'll be doing about a series of 6 hearings.
That was Oregon U.S. Senator Jeff Merkley speaking today at a hearing for the U.S. Senate Committee on Environment and Public Works. Providing inclusive foods has become an important part of the mission for food pantries in the Pacific Northwest. The American Heart Association has partnered with food banks and pantries in Washington State, trying to ensure they provide foods that are culturally relevant for the populations they serve. As Eric Tegedoff reports, Restoration Community Impact is a program that provides greens through its market that includes a variety of cultures.
Food assistance is integral for families, but it's also important that the food available makes sense culturally. The American Heart Association has partnered with food banks and pantries across Washington State to ensure they're able to provide culturally relevant meals. One of those organizations is Restoration Community Impact, based in the Tri-Cities. Marlando Sparks and his wife founded the organization. Along with delivering food boxes, Sparks says his wife created the Restoration Market, where people can come in and select food.
She and our team services probably over 150 families every day. And these families are Hispanic, these families are Russian, these families are Arabic, these families are Somali. They come from all different walks of life.
Sparks says Restoration Community Impact delivers more than 3,600 culturally relevant food boxes to the region as well. His organization also works with people outside of food services, including victims of domestic violence and people reentering society from correctional and substance abuse facilities. Cherish Hart with the American Heart Association Puget Sound says people of color suffer from disproportionately high rates of food insecurity in the U.S., including in Washington. She says providing culturally relevant food can help break through some of these inequities.
People want food that is really responsive to their needs, and they want things that they know how to cook and to use, not just a random bag of food that may not be sustainable for their family.
Stephanie Sparks says people in the community are grateful for the services her organization provides.
We shed tears daily with people just hugging us and just giving people hope and just trying to be a blessing to others and letting them know that we're all in this together and there are people who truly care.
For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
So-called dirty energy can impact kids. For example, diesel buses emit fumes with formaldehyde and benzene, some of the same chemicals found in cigarettes. As Alex Gonzalez reports, scientists are pushing to make the switch to cleaner energy more accessible.
April is International Earth Month. For many climate scientists and advocates across the world, it's a time to raise environmental awareness. In Arizona, a group called Science Moms wants families to know about new rebates and tax credits available to them through what Joellen Russell, a geosciences professor at the University of Arizona and co-founder of Science Moms, says has been facilitated through landmark federal clean energy laws. She adds, many are still not aware of the tools at their disposal or the reasons why they should make the switch to cleaner energy.
So by talking to moms, honestly, about how dirty energy harms our kids' health and how switching to clean energy is an act of, you know, mom love, we can help ensure this record investment in fighting climate change and cleaning our air is put to good use.
Russell adds dirty energy causes many adverse health effects, especially for children. She says recently passed federal climate laws have now allocated billions of dollars towards making clean energy more affordable. She encourages families to take advantage of the rebates and tax credits to purchase products like heat pumps, which she says are a clean way to heat and cool your house while significantly slashing your utility bill and reducing air pollution. As a professional and a mom herself, Russell says she understands moms are always busy, but still encourages families to take action. She says not to give in to climate despair. Russell says the United States has dropped more than 20% of its peak carbon emissions since 2007. She adds the U.S. is the fastest reducing country in the world while simultaneously growing our economy and population. She says these federal dollars will only help accelerate the decrease in carbon emissions.
If we keep on the trajectory we're on right now, we'll have cut 50% by 2032, and we will have dropped from 22% of global emissions to 6%. Not only is there hope, we're leading the way here in the U.S. and here in Arizona.
Russell also encourages parents to engage with local schools and let them know electric school buses will cut toxic fumes emitted from diesel buses, and says to start conversations about cleaner energy with family and friends in person and on social media. For Arizona News Connection, I'm Alex Gonzalez.
The opioid crisis continues to be felt in the Pacific Northwest and across the country, but those who are fighting to prevent more deaths got a boost this week. By this summer, federal officials say over-the-counter naloxone could be a reality. As Mark Moen reports, this opens up access for a life-saving tool for opioid overdoses.
States like Minnesota continue to grapple with recent spikes in fatal overdoses tied to opioids. Now, a federal agency has taken what aid groups say is a big step in preventing such deaths. This week, the Food and Drug Administration approved over-the-counter sales of the nasal version of naloxone, which rapidly reverses the effects of an opioid overdose. Sold under the name brand Narcan, the product has only been available through a prescription. Minnesota recently recorded a 44% increase in opioid overdose deaths, but Maddie Reagan with the state's Steve Rumler Hope Network points out that in 2021, there were nearly 5,000 non-fatal overdoses.
So what that says to me is that naloxone is having an important impact on keeping people alive.
The FDA says its action paves the way for the life-saving medication to be sold directly in places beyond pharmacies, such as gas stations and grocery stores, as well as online. But Reagan and various medical organizations still worry about the cost, potentially still keeping it out of reach for many individuals. The drug's manufacturer declined to comment on what the new price structure would look like. Currently, Narcan doses typically cost around $130 for those without insurance. Reagan says that forces harm reduction groups to focus on certain strategies to distribute the product to those who need it.
We primarily distribute intramuscular naloxone because it's significantly less expensive, so we're able to get high volumes out into the community.
Intramuscular naloxone involves injections, and some health agencies say the nasal form is easier to use and more appealing for those worried about using needles. As for the prescription requirement, many states, including Minnesota, have already adopted laws to make it easier for an individual to obtain the medication from a pharmacist. Mike Moen, Minnesota News Connection.
You're listening to the KABU Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for KABU News In-Depth. At 6, it's Rose City Native Radio. Then at 7, the Indigenous Power Hour. Tonight's weather, cloudy, down to 42 degrees overnight. Tomorrow's weather, showers early, becoming steady rain later in the day, the high reaching 48. We will see that rain continue through the weekend with nighttime temperatures dipping into the 30s. Today in history, on this date in 1981, after addressing a labor meeting, President Ronald Reagan was shot in the chest outside of a Washington, D.C. hotel by John Hinckley Jr. Reagan survived surgery to repair his lung. Our quote of the day is from Reagan, who told his wife Nancy, "Honey, I forgot to duck." He told the surgeons, "Please tell me you're Republicans." The former CEO of Starbucks testifies about the company's treatment of its workers. The Senate repeals authorization of military force in Iraq. And Kentucky overrides the governor's veto, impacting gender-affirming care for children. With more in the stories impacting our democracy, here's today's edition of 2023 Talks.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
This bill is going to become the law of the land. Congress is going to take back its constitutional responsibility over the power to declare war and to put our troops in harm's way.
On a 66-30 vote, the Senate repealed the 1991 and 2002 authorizations of military force against Iraq. Virginia Senator Mark Warner called the repeals long overdue, and some lawmakers said their initial approval of them was a mistake. The measure now goes to the House. Meanwhile, public officials across the country are renewing calls for gun safety protections after the mass shooting at a Nashville private school. In less than 100 days, there have been 130 mass shootings with 193 deaths and 498 injuries, according to the Gun Violence Archive. Chris Brown, president of the gun control organization Brady, said red flag laws might have prevented the shooting.
19 states and the District of Columbia have those laws, and they enable family members in some states, law enforcement in all states, to remove guns from an individual who is at risk to themselves and others.
Tennessee has no red flag law. A 2022 analysis from the Kaiser Family Foundation noted firearms are the leading cause of death for children ages 1 to 19. Just a month ago, several House Republicans backed a bill to make an AR-15-style rifle the national gun of the U.S. Howard Schultz, former CEO of Starbucks, testified before a Senate committee describing the coffee chain as a leader in workers' rights, providing health insurance, college tuition reimbursement, and a $17.50 minimum wage. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders grilled Schultz about the company's union-busting efforts in Buffalo, New York.
An administrative law judge found Starbucks guilty of, quote, egregious and widespread misconduct, end quote, widespread coercive behavior, and showed, quote, a general disregard for the employees' fundamental rights, end quote.
Officials from federal financial agencies testified before the House Financial Services Committee about recent bank failures. Martin Gruenberg, chairman of the FDIC, acknowledged more can be done to better inform the public about the banking industry.
We should do more and perhaps a better job of explaining to the public how deposit insurance works, what is covered, what is not covered, what are the options available to people when they open a bank account.
Kentucky is the latest state to pass a law banning gender transition care for children under the age of 18, as the Republican-controlled legislature overrode Governor Andy Beshear's veto. Additionally, the law rejects requirements for schools to refer to students by their preferred pronouns. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
The Vatican has finally ended a justification that people used for the taking of lands from indigenous people. With that story and much more, here's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
The Vatican has rejected the doctrine of discovery, which justified colonization and the taking of indigenous lands. Two Vatican departments issued a joint statement Thursday saying it's not part of teachings of the Catholic Church. Indigenous people have long called for the church to rescind the legal concept. Tribal advocates are objecting to an online auction of native artifacts. Robin Vincent has more.
A lot of the pieces in a Bonhams auction come from the late University of Colorado Denver professor Dean Taylor. Items are going for hundreds of dollars and include things like a beaded hide doll from the Plains Indians and hide drums. Tribal advocates say the dispossession of native cultural and sacred items like these is common today. Shannon O'Loughlin directs the Association on American Indian Affairs. She says there's a direct relationship between alarming health statistics in Indian country and this kind of dispossession.
We look at all of the statistics. They're horrible in Indian country. And all of those things are the result of this intergenerational historic trauma. Being dispossessed of your home, the things that give you health and security.
O'Loughlin says the auction is one of many that should give collectors pause. She urges people to consider the human costs of commercializing these sacred items. For National Native News, I'm Robin Vincent.
The Bristol Bay Sustainability Summit took place this week in Dillingham, Alaska. It's a time for people to gather and talk about what sustainability means for the region. As KDLG's Izzy Ross reports, the keynote speech focused on the region's native communities and cultural bearers.
Igiagix Village Council President Alexana Salmon doesn't think the way forward is a mystery.
What we're trying to achieve isn't impossible. It already was. We come from perfection.
During her keynote speech at the Bristol Bay Sustainability Summit, Salmon said she used to think she had to leave the village in order to succeed. But that has changed.
I want to be one of those elders that is wise. I want to share how to sow, where the best berry patches are, how to make all the traditional foods. That's what I want to be, is that elder.
Salmon keeps returning to traditional knowledge as the most powerful way to protect and sustain Bristol Bay's lands and peoples. She said tribes need to assert their authority as nations in land stewardship.
Let's sustain for 8,000 more, leaving the littlest footprint. In Alaska, we have the opportunity to do it right, to get it right.
That means people can focus on sustaining instead of restoring. And part of that is acknowledging the efforts of others. Salmon said her elders had to give up living freely on the land to ensure the community's children had a school. And they focused on Western-style settlements in order to keep them home.
I had no idea that my entire community reorganized and settled so that I could have that education at home, so that I could love and live Igiagig. That is a sacrifice.
Salmon said moving forward, they need to continue to focus on education, like speaking Yupik in the classroom and creating local opportunities for students. As for the sustainability people are seeking, Salmon said it's already embedded within Bristol Bay's Indigenous peoples.
This is our state. We're the only people with an inherent right to our lands and waters. We have a proven track record. We have never diminished our resources. We have stood the test of time.
I'm Izzy Ross.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
A survey shows more than 50% of college students are stressed to their breaking points. Demand for campus counseling services is surpassing the capacity for many colleges. The report from the new Lumina Foundation Gallup survey shows there are ways higher education could be creative and flexible, as Joey Graham reports.
New findings confirm suspicions about the top reasons many students considered dropping out of college over the last 6 months. The Gallup and Lumina Foundation report, Stressed Out and Stopping Out, the Mental Health Crisis in Higher Education, reveals about 3 in 5 undergraduates say emotional stress and mental health are the biggest reasons they've considered quitting. Both far exceed such other factors as cost and course difficulty. Dr. Zainab Okolo at Lumina Foundation says a growing mental health crisis is making it difficult to keep pace with students requesting assistance.
Counseling professionals were overwhelmed, where they had to create wait lists for students that were brave enough to finally reach out for help. On average now, the wait lists are about 8 months. This is a resource demand issue, and the data has made it clear that our students need these mental health resources.
Okolo says isolation exacerbated during the COVID-19 restrictions is waning, but warns students in a 2 or 4 year program are just as likely to drop out today than they were during the once-in-a-generation pandemic. One of the glaring data points for Okolo is that 73% of young adults who decided to forego higher education entirely say mental health issues are a significant reason, ranking higher than their need to work. She says it's an all-hands-on-deck situation, with every sector having to make significant adjustments to recenter and reconsider mental health.
One example of that, the National Governors Association, their winter meeting was centered on how to equip and inform governors around their investments. And then we're seeing in North Carolina and California, Kentucky, Louisiana, these governors coming together and going, yes, we hear you, and let's put some funding towards that work.
Okolo adds, in states like Indiana, with a high concentration of rural communities, students who have challenges accessing in-person services would benefit from online services. The survey says 7 in 10 college students rate their on-campus mental health resources positively, although those who actually face mental health issues rate them lower. Lumina Foundation VP Courtney Brown says schools can learn from these results.
There's a way to help students, so this isn't a doom and gloom. We can actually use this and move forward, and we did see in the data that students who felt like they were supported by faculty and students experienced much less stress.
Support for this reporting was provided by Lumina Foundation. I'm Joey Graham, Indiana News Service.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, March 30th, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem, Eric Tegedov, Mike Moen, Alex Gonzalez, and Joey Graham. The producer is Annette Newell, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Public News Service and Native Voice One. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Annette Newell. Thanks so much for joining us. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or